Good morning. If you're visiting here with us today, we're thankful to have you. If you've been here a long time, we're thankful to have you back. It's just good to be together, to have a chance to worship God, to start off this new year in praise and devotion and thanksgiving to God. So it's good to be back together again this morning and always. We're starting a new sermon series today, and we'll be talking more about that as we go along this morning. The Apostle Peter once wrote a letter to the churches in Asia Minor. These churches were experiencing persecution and ostracism and rejection for their faith in Jesus. And Peter writes to encourage them, calling them to persevere in their faith and to come to a deeper understanding of that which they believed. At the time in which their faith was under fire, Peter calls them to deepen their faith, to draw closer to God, to understand more clearly that which they believed. And Peter makes this statement about halfway through the letter he is writing to these Christians. He says this, "But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you will be blessed. Have no fear of them, those who stand against you, nor be troubled, but in your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. Yet do it with gentleness and respect." Peter's words written to Christians in Asia Minor over 2,000 years ago are just as poignant today. For we live in an age in which Christianity is waning in our Western world. If you look at Europe today, you will see that Europe has become a post-Christian society. And by all indications, America is on its way there as well. And the reason we would say that is because of this. Many seem to be losing their faith. Current estimates in the United States are that 70% of teenagers will not attend church by the time that they leave college. 60% of those will have given up on church and institutional religion, and another 10 to 15% will have walked away from Christianity altogether. And in the past, we used to say, well, they'll come back when they have children, but that doesn't seem to be happening nearly as much for the generations today. For many in our society reject faith and its tenets altogether. One of my favorite shows on television, I hesitate to say this from the pulpit, but is Big Bang Theory. And a recent episode showed Sheldon Cooper, the physicist and one of the main protagonists, dropping to his knees in order to pray to get Star Wars tickets. Now, he makes this statement, "This goes against everything I stand for. But desperate times call for desperate measures." And he falls to his knees and he begins to say this, "Lord, this is Sheldon Cooper. You're good friends with my mom. I know I have spent my life denying that you exist." And then suddenly one of his friends jumps up and says, "I got through." And he jumps to his feet and shouts, "And I will continue to do so. I will continue denying that you exist." And he has a hallelujah thrown in there. And while humorous, it also shows the casual rejection of faith that is held by many in our mainstream society. Noted author Christopher Hitchens, who is an essayist and an atheist, wrote this about faith. "Faith is the surrender of the mind. It's the surrender of reason. It's the surrender of the only thing that makes us different from other animals. In essence, to have faith is to make you stupid. It's our need to believe and to surrender our skepticism and our reason, our yearning to discard that and put our faith or our trust in something or someone that is the sinister thing to me." Out of all the virtues, the supposed virtues, faith must be the overriding. That's Hitchens' point of view. And he simply summarizes how many others feel, that faith is for the weak. As Marx wrote, it's an opiate for the masses. Yet most of us here today would argue that faith isn't making us weaker. To believe doesn't mean to surrender our minds or to give up our reason or to bury our heads in the sand. People want to argue that faith and reason stand at complete odds against one another, that they're enemies to each other. But the opposite is actually true. The more one thinks and reasons and contemplates and wrestles, the more our faith can grow. At its very core, faith is about knowing God, seeking understanding of God, and coming to know God Himself better. Faith isn't about checking reason at the door, but faith involves believing in God and knowing what and why we believe. People want to argue that, faith isn't just an intellectual acquiescence to a belief system, or it's a way of just accepting a way of thinking. But instead, faith is a journey that transforms every aspect of a believer's entire being, their heart, their mind, their soul, and their strength. Faith affects both the heart and the head. Faith challenges us to know what we believe, but it also calls us to constantly grow in what we believe, to deepen our knowledge of God. That's both our intellectual knowledge of God and our experiential knowledge of God. It's simply a way of saying we want to know God better with both our heads and with our hearts, which is what this first sermon of the year and the first sermon in the series. For the next 2 months or so, we're going to be talking about what we believe. We'll examine various aspects of Christian faith, hoping to strengthen what we already know and also expand who God is and what He is all about. So to begin today and to begin this series, I want to start with what we believe about faith. Which, to be honest, is kind of a strange topic because we're saying what we believe about believing something. And most of you are hoping this is going to be a short sermon then. I mean, let's be honest, I'm the only one who raised my hand when Ryan asked who likes long sermons. But isn't faith just about believing? Just about making a decision? You hear the evidence, you weigh out the facts and the consequences, and you come to a decision, and that's that. If only faith were that easy to understand. Roy and I have been talking about that topic off and on for the past 2 or 3 weeks. He sent me an article yesterday I can't even understand the title of, talking about faith and how we come to believe in something. So we have to ask the question, what is faith? The Greek word in the New Testament translated as faith is the Greek word pistis. And here's what pistis means. Pistis is used of belief with the predominant idea of trust or confidence, and whether God or in Christ, springing from faith and the same. Faith is what it's saying. Faith means trust, confidence, assurance, and belief. The Bible actually defines pistis for itself in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, the verse we read just a few minutes ago. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. The conviction of things not seen. Some of you grew up with other versions, so the King James says this. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for and evidence of things not seen. The NIV says it's confidence in what we hope for and assurance of what we do not see. So you're hearing the same theme over and over here. It's about assurance and hope and trust and confidence. Even though we cannot see what we believe, we live with certainty in the object of our faith. It's about conviction, evidence, confidence, surety, and certainty. It's about holding on to what we believe in the face of anything. It's about being confident in God and in His promises, confident that God both exists and that God is going to do what He said He's going to do. Faith is confidence, assurance, trust, certainty. That is the essence of faith according to the writer of Hebrews. Which leaves many of us at times feeling lost. Because if we're honest with ourselves, many of us have had doubts. We've wrestled with our faith. We've wondered, we've pondered, we've questioned, we've struggled. I still remember in high school sitting around at a youth retreat with a whole bunch of guys out of my class. We were sitting around a campfire late one night, and one of my best friends, Josh, looked at me and with tears in his eyes said this, "What if it's all a hoax? What if a bunch of guys got together and wrote a book and then passed it off to us? What if God doesn't exist at all?" And Josh was pouring out his heart and the questions he had, the questions he felt that no one would allow him to ask. And many of us have had some of those same questions. We've wrestled with faith and dealt with doubt. Maybe it was while we were sitting in a biology class, Or maybe it came when we were surrounded by a group of friends who didn't believe. Maybe it arose in the midst of the pain and losses that we experience in life. Maybe it came in the midst of a broken relationship or a difficult diagnosis or a challenge that we faced in life. Maybe it came in the midst of a time of depression. Or maybe it came in a time of reading and studying, whether reading the Bible itself or a book about the Bible. But at times we all experience doubt. And if we've ever had doubts, then what does that say about our faith? And to be honest, we struggle with passages like this one found in the book of James. But let him who asks, ask in faith, with no doubting. For the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. The person must not suppose he will receive anything, for he is a double-minded man. And that passage doesn't leave us feeling very confident and sure and certain. For if faith is about confidence and assurance, then maybe my faith isn't as strong as I thought it was, we might feel. Or maybe I don't actually have any faith at all. Yet we do ourselves a disservice when we take Hebrews 11:1 out of context. In fact, I feel like by just ripping this verse out of everything that surrounds it, we miss the whole point of what the writer of Hebrews is trying to say about faith itself. For the writer of Hebrews, the author is writing to a group of second-generation Jewish Christians. These are people who have grown up believing in Jesus, and they've held on to their Christian faith, but then they begin to struggle in their faith. They're facing persecution and ostracism. They're being rejected by both their Jewish and their pagan neighbors. And they're considered outsiders in their very own culture. And because of all these pressures that they're facing, they begin to doubt. They begin to wonder, to question, is Jesus really the fulfillment of the Old Testament? Is Christianity really superior to all the other options that are out there? Is it really worth it to hold on to my faith in spite of all the persecution that I am facing? Wouldn't it just be easier to give up and give in? And so the writer of Hebrews speaks to their doubt. The whole letter is talking about the doubts that they're facing as they wrestle with their faith. And so he reminds them of the superiority of Christ in the first part, the beginning of his letter. He then calls them to a deeper understanding of their faith, that which they believed, by framing Christ as the fulfillment of all of the parts of the Old Testament prophecy and prediction and history and promises. And then he calls them to a deeper level of faith that perseveres in spite of the difficulties that they're facing in their lives. For the writer of Hebrews writes about faith in the midst of this passage. But recall the former days, when, after you were enlightened, you endured a hard struggle with sufferings, sometimes being publicly exposed to reproach and affliction, and sometimes being partners with those who were so treated. Whether you yourself were being beaten and tortured and dealt with harshly, or whether you were just alongside of those that were. For you had your compassion on those in prison, and you joyfully accepted the plundering of your property, since you knew that you yourselves had a better possession and a more abiding one. Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. For you have no need of endurance, for you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. For yet a little while, and the coming one will come and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. So, is another way of translating the word here for but, so we are not those who shrink back and are destroyed, but those who have faith and persevere their souls. We are those who push through in the midst of doubt. For now faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. For by it the people of old received their commendation. And then he goes on to give us a whole list of people who wrestled with life and struggled with faith and held tightly to the promises of God. The writer of Hebrews is speaking to those who are dealing with doubt in the face of hardship and persecution. And he is calling them to hold tightly to their faith. Do not throw away your confidence. Endure, persevere, know that God is faithful. In essence, the author of Hebrews is saying, it's okay to doubt. Just let that doubt lead you back to God. One of my favorite stories in all of the Bible is found in Mark chapter 9. Jesus has just come down from the Mount of Transfiguration, and he encounters a very chaotic scene. His disciples are surrounded by a crowd and being yelled at by some scribes. They're in the midst of an argument. And when Jesus comes near, he finds out that they're arguing about a young man. And he doesn't really know what's going on, so the boy's father speaks up. And the father says this, "Teacher, I brought my son to you, for he has a spirit that makes him mute. And whenever it seizes him, it throws him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth, and he becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast it out, and they were not able." And he goes on to tell Jesus that all of this has happened since he was a young child. From the very first days of his birth, this spirit has seized a hold of him and tried to hurt him or kill him, even throwing him into the fire or into the river, trying to kill him and take his life. And I can't imagine what this man has gone through. I can't imagine it. As a parent, I would do absolutely anything to take care of my child. And I'm sure he has done the same. I'm sure he's pursued every option. He's seen every specialist. He's gone to every crackpot and quack that's out there. All to no avail. Nothing has healed his son. Things have only gotten worse. And I'm sure this man has prayed. And I'm sure he's wrestled. And I'm sure he questioned God as he cried out for help. And I'm sure that his life is thick with doubt. But he comes to Jesus anyway. He comes seeking help, hoping for a healing, and praying for a miracle. Maybe this man can do something, he must be thinking. Maybe he can do what no one else is do. I don't know if he can, but it sure can't hurt. And what he says to Jesus is this, "But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us." And although we aren't told about Jesus' emotions here, we can imagine his compassion, his care, his desire to help this man, both with the problem he's experiencing with his son and with his faith. And Jesus says this, "If you can, all things are possible for the one who believes." And immediately the father of the child cried out and said, "I believe. Help my unbelief." What an amazing response. Words spoken with truth and honesty. A man who's willing to show his vulnerability, for it's an amazing statement of faith. "I do believe, but help me overcome my unbelief." I love this story because it reminds me that faith isn't the absence of doubts. It's perseverance in the face of doubt. Indeed, doubt is a very integral part of faith. Now stick with me through this. Doubt is an integral part of faith, for it causes us to wrestle, to question, to read and think and contemplate and pray and seek and search and trust in God. Doubt causes us to re-examine our preconceptions of who God is and what He's about. It calls us to check our theology and to dig deeper into that which we believe. Doubts can help us clarify our understanding of God. Doubting can challenge us to know more, and it calls us also to rely on God and get to know Him more in the midst of those times. I love what theologian and minister Timothy Keller says about both doubt and faith. "A faith without some doubts," he says, "is like a human body without any antibodies in it. People who blithely go through life too busy or too indifferent to ask hard questions about why they believe as they do will find themselves defenseless against either the experience of a tragedy or the probing questions of a smart skeptic. A person's faith can collapse almost overnight if he or she has failed over the years to acknowledge his or her own doubts, which should only be discarded after a long series of reflection. Believers should acknowledge and wrestle with doubts, not only their own, but also those of their friends and neighbors." I love what he says there. It's the only way that we can continue to grow and to protect ourselves, because doubt can act as the antibodies of faith. Faith isn't the absence of doubt. It's perseverance in spite of doubts and fears and frustrations and challenges and consequences that arrive because we believe in God. Doubt can lead us to a deeper faith. This week I've been reading some in education theory, and I know probably less now than when I started, and that's totally okay. But one of the things I encountered this week is this: confusion shouldn't always be seen as a lack of learning, but instead as a necessary state in learning. Confusion can help us learn. A friend of mine actually reminded me of this week because I was sharing some prayer requests with him, and he sent back this text as part of the discussion. Remember that the prerequisite to clarity and understanding is confusion. And that felt like something I would open a fortune cookie and get until I started thinking about it and dwelling with it. Because I think confusion allows us to ask big questions, important questions that lead us to a deeper knowledge and a better comprehension. Doubt can lead us to faith. It calls us to ask big questions. It asks us to examine what we believe in our relationship with God. And that then leads us to a deeper knowledge of God and a deeper relationship with God, which gives us more clarity, which then at times brings about some more confusion, which allows us to ask more questions of God and seek more clarity from God and to draw deeper to God and to grow to know about and know God more. And it's a cycle that continues over and over as we dig and wrestle and abide with God, which allows us to draw closer to Him. So if you walk away with nothing else from this sermon today, I want you to know this. It's okay to doubt. You don't hear that from a pulpit very often, right? But it is. It's okay to doubt, to question, to seek, to struggle. But let that doubt lead you back to God. That's the point of this sermon series we're going to kick off this year with. We want to talk about what we believe. And these topics will include, well, what you see on the board. Topics about God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit. Topics about sin and grace. What is baptism? What's the purpose of the church? We're going to talk about new life. We're going to talk about the revelation of God, how God reveals Himself to man. And there's some others as well. But we want this to be a safe place in which you can ask questions. Each week we want your questions to be a part of our preparation for the sermon for the upcoming week. And so if there's anything that you want the sermon to touch on, any question you have or concern you have or thing you struggle with, that's awesome. My email is there inside of the bulletin. Shoot me an email this week and I'll see if I can work it into our sermon. If not, I promise to email you back. Even if it's, I don't know, let me look it up and I'll come back to you. But we want your questions to be what helps propel our sermon forward. Also, starting next Sunday, we're going to offer a time of a question and answer down front, just over here after the service. A time for anybody who wants to just to come and ask whatever questions you have about life and faith and God. But we pray and we hope that this sermon series will help deepen your faith wherever you are in your faith journey. Some of us in the room have a deep and abiding faith, a faith that we've had for many, many years. And my prayer is that your faith will be strengthened and you will come to know more of what you believe and why you believe it. Others in our audience today are new in faith, and they need to continue learning and growing. And I pray you will learn new things about God and find new ideas to explore and contemplate as we draw closer to God through this series. And others here are in the beginnings of faith. You don't have a clue as to what you believe or why you believe it or whether God exists at all. And that's totally okay. My prayer is that this series will help you dig deeper and ask important questions about life and faith and existence. For we believe in an amazing God. A God who's big enough to take our fears and our doubts and our confusion and to bring us hope and love and joy and clarity and grace and peace. For we have a God who reveals Himself to His people. The sermon is yours today. If there's any way we can bless you as a church, if there's any way we can help you with the struggles you face in life, with the questions that you have, whether you need us to come and rejoice with you or to pray over you or just to cry with you, If there's any way we can help you advance in your faith and in your journey, we want to do that. We're going to offer a public invitation, a time in which you can respond and come forward publicly. You're also welcome to seek out any of the leaders, the elders, or any member you trust as well afterwards and talk with them. But if there's any way we can bless you this morning, we're going to offer an invitation during our song. So come as we stand and as we sing together.